Chapter 12. Their families, whom you can never too much delight to honor. Elsewhere, through the agency of the great railway companies, some of which are bestirring themselves in this matter with a gallantry and generosity deserving of all praise. Secondly and lastly, let me say one word out of my own personal heart, which is always very near to it in this connection. Do not let us, in the midst of the visible objects of nature, whose workings we can tell of in figures, surrounded by machines that can be made to the thousandth part of an inch, acquiring every day knowledge which can be proved upon a slate or demonstrated by a microscope, do not let us, in the laudable pursuit of the facts that surround us, neglect the fancy and the imagination which equally surround us as a part of the great scheme. Let the child have its fables, let the man or woman into which it changes, always remember those fables tenderly. Let numerous graces and ornaments, that cannot be weighed and measured, and that seem at first sight idle enough, continue to have their places about us, be we never so wise. The hardest head may coexist with the softest heart. The union and just balance of those two is always a blessing to the possessor, and always a blessing to mankind. The divine teacher was as gentle and considerate as he was powerful and wise. You all know how he could still the raging of the sea, and could hush a little child. As the utmost results of the wisdom of men can only be at last, to help to raise this earth to that condition to which his doctrine, untainted by the blindnesses and passions of men, would have exalted it long ago, so let us always remember that he set us the example of blending the understanding and the imagination, and that, following it ourselves, we tread in his steps, and help our race on to its better and best days. Knowledge, as all followers of it must know, has a very limited power indeed, when it informs the head alone, but when it informs the head and the heart too, it has a power over life and death, the body and the soul, and dominates the universe. Speech. Coventry, December 4, 1858. On the above evening, a public dinner was held at the Castle Hotel, on the occasion of the presentation to Mr. Charles Dickens of a gold watch, as a mark of gratitude for the reading of his Christmas Carol, given in December of the previous year, in aid of the funds of the Coventry Institute. The chair was taken by C. W. Hoskins Esquire. Mr. Dickens acknowledged the testimonial in the following words.
Mr. Chairman, Mr. Vice Chairman, and gentlemen, I hope your minds will be greatly relieved by my assuring you that it is one of the rules of my life never to make a speech about myself. If I knowingly did so, under any circumstances, it would be least of all under such circumstances as these, when its effect on my acknowledgement of your kind regard, and this pleasant proof of it, would be to give me a certain constrained air, which I fear would contrast badly with your greeting, so cordial, so unaffected, so earnest, and so true. Furthermore, your chairman has decorated the occasion with a little garland of good sense, good feeling, and good taste, so that I am sure that any attempt at additional ornament would be almost an impertinence. Therefore I will at once say how earnestly, how fervently, and how deeply I feel your kindness. This watch, with which you have presented me, shall be my companion in my hours of sedentary working at home, and in my wanderings abroad. It shall never be absent from my side, and it shall reckon off the labors of my future days, and I can assure you that after this night the object of those labors will not less than before be, to uphold the right, and to do good. And when I have done with time and its measurement, this watch shall belong to my children. And as I have 7 boys, and as they have all begun to serve their country in various ways, or to elect into what distant regions they shall roam, it is not only possible, but probable, that this little voice will be heard scores of years hence, who knows? In some yet unfounded city in the wilds of Australia, or communicating Greenwich time to Coventry Street, Japan. Once again, and finally, I thank you, and from my heart of hearts, I can assure you that the memory of tonight, and of your picturesque and interesting city, will never be absent from my mind, and I can never more hear the lightest mention of the name of Coventry without having inspired in my breast sentiments of unusual emotion and unusual attachment.
Later in the evening, in proposing the health of the chairman, Mr. Dickens said,
"There may be a great variety of conflicting opinions with regard to farming, and especially with reference to the management of a clay farm. But, however various opinions as to the merits of a clay farm may be, there can be but one opinion as to the merits of a clay farmer, and it is the health of that distinguished agriculturist which I have to propose. In my ignorance of the subject, I am bound to say that it may be, for anything I know, indeed I am ready to admit that it is, exceedingly important that a clay farm should go for a number of years to waste. But I claim some knowledge as to the management of a clay farmer, and I positively object to his ever lying fallow, in the hope that this very rich and teeming individual may speedily be plowed up, and that we shall gather into our barns and storehouses the admirable crop of wisdom which must spring up whenever he is sown. I take leave to propose his health, begging to assure him that the kind manner in which he offered to me your very valuable present, I can never forget." Speech. London, March 29, 1862.
At a dinner of the Artists' General Benevolent Institution, the following address was delivered by Mr. Charles Dickens from the chair.
7 or 8 years ago, without the smallest expectation of ever being called upon to fill the chair at an anniversary festival of the Artists' General Benevolent Institution, and without the remotest reference to such an occasion, I selected the administration of that charity as the model on which I desired that another should be reformed, both as regarded the mode in which the relief was afforded, and the singular economy with which its funds were administered. As a proof of the latter quality, during the past year, the cost of distributing £11.26 among the recipients of the bounty of the charity amounted to little more than £100, inclusive of all office charges and expenses. The experience and knowledge of those entrusted with the management of the funds are a guarantee that the last available farthing of the funds will be distributed among proper and deserving recipients. Claiming, on my part, to be related in some degree to the profession of an artist, I disdain to stoop to ask for charity, in the ordinary acceptation of the term, on behalf of the artists. In its broader and higher signification of generous confidence, lasting trustfulness, love and confiding belief, I very readily associate that cardinal virtue with art. I decline to present the artist to the notice of the public as a grown-up child, or as a strange, unaccountable, moon-stricken person, waiting helplessly in the street of life, to be helped over the road by the crossing sweeper. On the contrary, I present the artist as a reasonable creature, a sensible gentleman, and as one well acquainted with the value of his time, and that of other people, as if he were in the habit of going on high change every day. The artist whom I wish to present to the notice of the meeting is one to whom the perfect enjoyment of the five senses is essential to every achievement of his life. He can gain no wealth nor fame by buying something which he never touched, and selling it to another who would also never touch or see it, but was compelled to strike out for himself every spark of fire which lighted, burned, and perhaps consumed him. He must win the battle of life with his own hand, and with his own eyes, and was obliged to act as general, captain, ensign, non-commissioned officer, private, drummer, great arms, small arms, infantry, cavalry, all in his own unaided self. When, therefore, I ask help for the artist, I do not make my appeal for one who was a cripple from his birth, but I ask it as part payment of a great debt which all sensible and civilized creatures owe to art, as a mark of respect to art, as a decoration, not as a badge, as a remembrance of what this land, or any land, would be without art, and as the token of an appreciation of the works of the most successful artists of this country. With respect to the society of which I am the advocate, I am gratified that it is so liberally supported by the most distinguished artists, and that it has the confidence of men who occupy the highest rank as artists, above the reach of reverses, and the most distinguished in success and fame, and whose support is above all price. Artists who have obtained wide world reputation know well that many deserving and persevering men, or their widows and orphans, have received help from this fund, and some of the artists who have received this help are now enrolled among the subscribers to the institution. Speech. London, May 20, 1862.
The following speech was made by Mr. Dickens, in his capacity as chairman, at the annual festival of the News Vendors and Provident Institution, held at the Freemasons Tavern on the above date.
When I had the honor of being asked to preside last year, I was prevented by indisposition, and I besought my friend, Mr. Wilkie Collins, to reign in my stead. He very kindly complied, and made an excellent speech. Now I tell you the truth, that I read that speech with considerable uneasiness, for it inspired me with a strong misgiving that I had better have presided last year with neuralgia in my face, and my subject in my head, rather than preside this year with my neuralgia all gone, and my subject anticipated. Therefore, I wish to preface the toast this evening by making the managers of this institution one very solemn and repentant promise, and it is, if ever I find myself obliged to provide a substitute again, they may rely upon my sending the most speechless man of my acquaintance. The chairman last year presented you with an amiable view of the universality of the newsman's calling. Nothing, I think, is left for me but to imagine the newsman's burden itself, to unfold one of those wonderful sheets which he every day disseminates, and to take a bird's eye view of its general character and contents. So, if you please, choosing my own time, though the newsman cannot choose his time, for he must be equally active in winter or summer, in sunshine or sleet, in light or darkness, early or late, but, choosing my own time, I shall for two or three moments start off with the newsman on a fine May morning, and take a view of the wonderful broadsheets which every day he scatters broadcast over the country. Well, the first thing that occurs to me following the newsman is that every day we are born, that every day we are married, some of us, and that every day we are dead. Consequently, the first thing the news vendor's column informs me is that Atkins has been born, that Catkins has been married, and that Atkins is dead. But the most remarkable thing I immediately discover in the next column is that Atkins has grown to be 17 years old, and that he has run away. For, at last, my eye lights on the fact that William A., who is 17 years old, is adjured immediately to return to his disconsolate parents, and everything will be arranged to the satisfaction of everyone. I am afraid he will never return, simply because, if he had meant to come back, he would never have gone away. Immediately below, I find a mysterious character in such a mysterious difficulty that it is only to be expressed by several disjointed letters, by several figures, and several stars. And then I find the explanation in the intimation that the writer has given his property over to his uncle, and that the elephant is on the wing. Then, still glancing over the shoulder of my industrious friend, the newsman, I find there are great fleets of ships bound to all parts of the earth, that they all want a little more stowage, a little more cargo, that they have a few more berths to let, that they have all the most spacious decks, that they are all built of teak and copper-bottomed, that they all carry surgeons of experience, and that they are all A1 at Lloyd's and anywhere else. Still glancing over the shoulder of my friend the newsman, I find I am offered all kinds of house lodging, clerks, servants, and situations, which I can possibly or impossibly want. I learn, to my intense gratification, that I need never grow old, that I may always preserve the juvenile bloom of my complexion, that if ever I turn ill, it is entirely my own fault. That if I have any complaint, and want brown cod liver oil or Turkish baths, I am told where to get them, and that, if I want an income of £7 a week, I may have it, by sending half a crown in postage stamps. Then I look to the police intelligence, and I can discover that I may bite off a human living nose cheaply, but if I take off the dead nose of a pig, or a calf from a shop window, it will cost me exceedingly dear. I also find that, if I allow myself to be betrayed into the folly of killing an inoffensive tradesman on his own doorstep, that little incident will not affect the testimonials to my character, but that I shall be described as a most amiable young man, and as, above all things, remarkable for the singular inoffensiveness of my character and disposition. Then I turn my eye to the fine arts, and, under that head, I see that a certain J.O. has most triumphantly exposed a certain J.O.B., which J.O.B. was remarkable for this particular ugly feature, that I was requested to deprive myself of the best of my pictures for 6 months. That for that time it was to be hung on a wet wall, and that I was to be requited for my courtesy in having my picture most impertinently covered with a wet blanket. To sum up the results of a glance over my newsman's shoulder, it gives a comprehensive knowledge of what is going on over the continent of Europe, and also of what is going on over the continent of America, to say nothing of such little geographical regions as India and China. Now, my friends, this is the glance over the newsman's shoulders from the whimsical point of view, which is the point, I believe, that most promotes digestion. The newsman is to be met with on steamboats, railway stations, and at every turn. His profits are small, he has a great amount of anxiety and care, and no little amount of personal wear and tear. He is indispensable to civilization and freedom, and he is looked for with pleasurable excitement every day, except when he lends the paper for an hour, and when he is punctual in calling for it, which is sometimes very painful. I think the lesson we can learn from our newsman is some new illustration of the uncertainty of life, some illustration of its vicissitudes and fluctuations. Mindful of this permanent lesson, some members of the trade originated this society, which affords them assistance in time of sickness and indigence. The subscription is infinitesimal. It amounts annually to 5 shillings. Looking at the returns before me, the progress of the society would seem to be slow, but it has only been slow for the best of all reasons, that it has been sure. The pensions granted are all obtained from the interest on the funded capital, and, therefore, the institution is literally as safe as the bank. It is stated that there are several news vendors who are not members of this society, but that is true in all institutions which have come under my experience. The persons who are most likely to stand in need of the benefits which an institution confers are usually the persons to keep away until bitter experience comes to them too late. Speech. London, May 11, 1864. On the above date, Mr. Dickens presided at the Adelphi Theatre, at a public meeting, for the purpose of founding the Shakespeare schools, in connection with the Royal Dramatic College, and delivered the following address. Ladies and gentlemen, fortunately for me, and fortunately for you, it is the duty of the chairman on an occasion of this nature, to be Gutenberg edition. End of chapter.